Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and we're going to resume with our discussion of the reemergence of German fascism and ultranationalism. We have been relying for information in this particular series on a pamphlet entitled Reunited Germany, the New Danger. That's put out by the Searchlight magazine, a British anti-fascist publication, not to be confused with the American Spotlight of a dramatically different ideological nature. The Reunited Germany, the New Danger was also put out, actually was put out by Searchlight in cooperation with Antifa Infoblatt, a German anti-fascist activist and information organization. By the way, most of the vast bulk of the information in this particular pamphlet comes from German sources, either reprints of German government documents or material taken, gleaned from mainstream German media. And again, these broadcasts should not be interpreted as being anti-German. They are anti-Nazi and anti-fascist. They are most definitely not anti-German. I'm a great admirer of many aspects of German culture myself. However, with that slight caveat, I guess it's not really a caveat, but with that notice, let's resume our discussion of the reemergence of German fascism, bearing in mind the fact that German fascism, Nazism, was never really purged. The denazification of Germany was essentially a political myth, which was deemed valuable in the Cold War because the doctrinaire anti-Nazi and anti-labor stance of Nazis and fascists was deemed very useful to the West during the Cold War. It was also deemed necessary from a propaganda standpoint to contrast the Stalinist dictatorship of East Germany with the so-called democratic West Germany, which, although it did have a democratic veneer, remained beneath that veneer essentially as Nazi as ever. All of the major institutions, the military, the intelligence community, the corporations, the banks, the civil service, the judges, the prosecutors, and also the vast majority of the governmental institutions and ministers either came directly from the Third Reich or are evolved from individuals and institutions that carried on the Third Reich's philosophy. Again, the denazification of Germany was a myth. It never happened, and the main reason for that is that the profoundly powerful pro-Nazi and pro-fascist elements in the United States essentially saw to it that denazification was a myth. It never really happened. In the past on this series, with Germany now beginning to assume a military role outside of its own borders and the tragedy now unfolding in the former Yugoslavia, a tragedy which the Germans helped create to a considerable extent and which I think warrants serious scrutiny as a possible deliberate gambit, anyway, we began this series by examining the continuity between the old German military under Adolf Hitler and the supposedly new Bundeswehr in the post-war period. There's an extreme degree of continuity at all levels, ideological and institutional. We also looked at the conversion of the Bundeswehr into an offensive force. It was previously defensive. This against the background of overall German economic and political policy. We took a look at German economic policy toward Eastern Europe and the nations that emerged from the former Soviet Union, a policy not aimed at redeveloping those areas into modern market economies, but an economic policy aimed at effecting political control of those areas. Key industries such as transport, energy, telecommunications, and the print media are being bought up by the Germans to effect political control. In addition to that, we've also taken a look at the continuity between German military policy, German economic policy, and German political policy, and in that context, the continuity between the official governmental policy of Helmut Kohl and his CDU-CSU and the so-called neo-Nazi organizations and extreme-right organizations in Germany. As we shall see, their policies are sometimes different, although parallel, sometimes identical and parallel, and there are very serious questions concerning the possibility that, in fact, those Nazi organizations are operating at the behest of the German government. Indeed, the evidence points ominously in that particular direction. We've been taking a look at German policy towards Eastern Europe and the countries that emerged from the former Soviet Union, in particular the continuity of policy between Adolf Hitler in the pre-war period and the current policies being pursued by the German government, in which the intelligence services are deliberately agitating among the German minorities in neighboring countries, and then under Adolf Hitler, the response of the governments in those countries to that agitation and covert operation was cited as the pretext for German aggression against these particular countries. Once again, the Germans are agitating among the Germanic minorities in neighboring countries, and once again there is continuity between the policies of the various Nazi organizations and the, quote, new, unquote, German government. Returning to reunited Germany, the new danger of the continuity between German economic policy and German financial policy, as exemplified by the Deutsche Bank, a top German commercial bank, and the policies of the CDU-CSU, and the activities of various Nazi groups in, German Nazi groups, that is, and German Nazi figures in Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, we read, overlapping with our last installment, speaking of Junge Freiheit, a young a fascist publication with a large circulation in Germany aimed at young German fascists, where Junge Freiheit and Deutsche Bank officials led, Nazis followed, taking their cue from the appeals for assistance to the German population in Kaliningrad. For example, it was reported in the liberal Frankfurter Rundschau on January 9, 1993, that, quote, right radical forces are trying to win influence among the ethnic Germans in Kaliningrad. And again, I would note that this is in the context of continuity between German military, German economic, and German political policy on the one hand, and also the continuity between the policies of the German government and the activities of the various Nazi and extreme nationalist groups, both inside of Germany and outside of Germany's borders. By the way, note that in our last installment, we took a look at an article, actually it was an article from Germany Alert, but drawing on information from Der Spiegel, a very respected German publication, maintaining that Ewald Altans, one of the top German Nazi leaders, was in fact for many years an agent of the Verfassungsschutz, a domestic German intelligence agency. Ewald Altans, among the most prominent of the German Nazi leaders that have been active in what used to be Eastern Europe and parts of what used to be the former Soviet Union. Of the continuity of Nazi activity in parts of what used to be East Prussia, and note again, German efforts at reincorporating Kaliningrad, now part of Russia, into Germany. Well, that's something we've dealt with in numerous broadcasts, including the Wilhelm Stauffer interviews available from archives on audio. That address will be given later on in the broadcast. Of the German Nazi activities aimed at re-Germanizing, quote-unquote, parts of the former Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, reunited Germany, the new danger, comments. At the forefront of these efforts can be found Ewald Altans and an even more frequent visitor to Kaliningrad, Manfred Roeder, R-O-E-D-E-R. At a meeting held near Bonn by the Nazi Initiative Gesamtdeutschland, Roeder treated his audience to an account of his perspectives on the former East Prussia. Among other things, he called for a re-Germanization of Kaliningrad and echoed the calls made since the early 1950s of former Hitler general and inveterate Nazi Otto Ernst Roemer for a strategic alliance between Germany and Russia. In addition, Roeder described favorably what he termed, quote, his good collaboration with the Russian administration in northeast Prussia. By the way, Otto Ernst Roemer was a key SS man, a member of the Liebstädter Adolf Hitler, an SS division which grew out of Hitler's personal guard. Roemer executed the July 20, 1944 conspirators against Adolf Hitler, and Ewald Altans, the same Ewald Altans that Der Spiegel maintains was an agent of the Verfassungsschutz, was his protege. By the way, we've taken a look also in past broadcasts at indications that many of these German Nazi activities are being conducted on behalf of German intelligence, in particular the BND, the German Intelligence Service, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, which grew out of the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit that was incorporated into the CIA at the end of World War II. Returning to reunited Germany, the new danger of Manfred Roeder and his viewpoints on the reincorporation of what are now parts of the Soviet Union, now parts of Russia, and various Eastern European countries into a greater Germany or Gross Deutschland, Roeder says, the reunited Germany, the new danger comments. More significantly, Roeder described his experiences to the more staid audience of the Frankfurt-based Deutsch-Russlandische Gesellschaft with an article in the December 1992 edition of its journal Russland und Wir. Here, he revealed the early objectives of Nazi penetration of Kaliningrad, quote, to found an association to gain the support of the government in Kaliningrad and to commission the construction of a reception center for Russlanddeutsche, unquote. Ex-terror bomber and convicted criminal Roeder reported that, quote, all three objectives were reached, unquote, and that work had already begun on the buildings, issuing an appeal for funds to enable, quote, our compatriots in the new Prussia, unquote, to buy houses and flats. Since then, Roeder, another ardent Zhirinovsky fan, has issued the occasional newsletter called Teutonic Unity, describing the efforts to build a German settlement at Wildscheide and to establish a propaganda center. Up to July of 1994, he He had made no fewer than 10 trips to the former East Prussia to, quote, do pioneer work, unquote, there. Also feverishly gathering funds for the Kaliningrad operation is recently jailed Austrian Nazi revisionist and anti-Semite Walter Ochsenberger, Ochsenberger. In a letter dated February 21, 1993, written to his wife from prison in Kiel, where he was arrested en route from Latvia, Ochsenberger complains that the newly arrived ethnic Germans, quote, will be treated as second-class citizens, unquote, by, quote, their drunken Russian rulers, unquote. In a second letter, dated February 22, 1993, Ochsenberger calls for immediate funds to be sent to Kaliningrad to purchase photocopying machines and printing equipment to facilitate the production of propaganda material for distribution amongst the German population there. The intentions of the Nazis are obvious: to set up a widespread agitation for renewed German rule in Kaliningrad as a springboard to a reconquest or annexation of the entire former territory of East Prussia. Kaliningrad is the foot in the door. Here, the Nazis find tacit encouragement from the Kohl government, which is itself financially sponsoring an influx of ethnic Germans, a de facto colonization into Kaliningrad. Again, note the continuity between the policies of the various German Nazis and the supposedly moderate, supposedly respectable policies of Helmut Kohl and the CDU-CSU, and the German government itself, indeed. Continuing. Resuming with the last sentence we read here, the Nazis find tacit encouragement from the Kohl government, which is itself financially sponsoring an influx of ethnic Germans, a de facto colonization into Kaliningrad. This proceeds parallel with German government pressure to secure special status for the city as a, quote, free port, unquote, effectively detaching it from Russia. These steps are cautiously backed inside Germany's ruling and business circles. For example, the news digest Fuchsbriefe, which has a strictly limited circulation amongst top management and banking in the CDU, said in its March 19, 1992 edition that, quote, the re-Germanization of Königsberg, still Kaliningrad, is proceeding slowly. The message from Königsberg is not yet being grasped by German enterprises, but much will change in the coming years. Like never before, we can now have the vision that Königsberg and the Russian part of East Prussia will once again be inhabited by a German minority, unquote. Publications like the little-known but well-informed Fuchsbriefe map out the issues not debated openly in the public domain and address the longer-term strategy of those bent on creating a new German imperialism in the, quote, new world order, unquote. Now, again, note that there is continuity between the so-called respectable elements of German society and a frightening degree of continuity, bearing in mind that Germany was never denazified. That is a myth. And the various Nazi groups, which are viewed ostensibly at least as disrespectable and as fringe elements. Nothing, well, they may not be worthy of respect, but they are certainly not fringe elements and worthy at least of respect as formidable opponents, which they most assuredly are. Continuing. Resuming once again with the last sentence, publications like the little-known but well-informed Fuchsbriefe map out the issues not debated openly in the public domain and address the longer-term strategy of those bent on creating a new German imperialism in the new world order. The efforts to accomplish these ambitions take various forms, ranging from subversion to political pressure. In December of 1993, only days after a demand by Foreign Minister Klaus Kinkel that Germany be allowed to open a consulate in Kaliningrad, the Russian authorities there confirmed that they had ordered a German Interior Ministry official out of the city after learning that he was engaged in espionage and subversive activities. This evidently deterred no one in Bonn, because on January 10, 1994, an internal CDU-CSU strategy paper was published by CDU defense specialist Friedbert Pflüger, foreign affairs experts Wilfried Bohm, and European affairs analyst Hartmut Kaschik, K-S-C-H-Y-K. The top-level briefing paper set out the conditions for reopening the so-called Königsberg question, a revanchist expression used three times in the 12-page document. After declaring acceptance that Königsberg belongs to Russia, the authors call for a demilitarization of the Russian enclave, or else, quote, Germany will feel hurt and will be forced to embark on an undesirable arms buildup, unquote. So basically, obviously, the diplomatic demands and the economic demands are being accompanied by a thinly veiled military threat. And again, the revamping of the Bundeswehr into an offensive force and the statements by Klaus Kinkel as well as Klaus Naumann, the inspector general of the Bundeswehr, head of the German armed forces, that the Bundeswehr is now an instrument of foreign policy should be viewed with great alarm. So something most people are simply not doing. Returning now to reunited Germany, the new danger. Vital instruments for this strategy are the Bonn government's financial support of the so-called ex-Belle organizations, with funds which find their way to nationalist and fascist extremists, and its intensifying official propaganda for, quote, help for Germans in Eastern Europe, unquote. Helmut Kohl's federal government is giving enormous financial and political aid to a whole galaxy of extreme right revanchist organizations whose political object is nothing less than the restoration of a gross Deutschland in its September 1, 1939 frontiers. It is also pursuing similar aims itself, though much more guardedly, while at the same time, for international public consumption, proclaiming its steadfast loyalty to the post-war settlement and frontiers. Nevertheless, East Prussian revanchists, for example, do rather well from German government funds. For example, the violently nationalist Landsmannschaft Ostprussen and its anti-Semitic newspaper, the Ostprussenblatt, which has denied the Nazi Holocaust, were allocated 750,000 Deutschmarks in the government's 1994 budget. Again, note the continuity between the German government and various German Nazi organizations. As we've indicated in the past, the Vertriebener groups, which we're going to be looking at greater length in just a couple of minutes, had their genesis with the SS and maintained contacts to the old SS infrastructure to this day. Resuming again with the reunited Germany, the new danger. Nevertheless, East Prussian revanchists, for example, do rather well from German government funds. For example, the violently nationalist Landsmannschaft Ostprussen and its anti-Semitic newspaper, the Ostprussenblatt, which has denied the Nazi Holocaust, were allocated 750,000 Deutschmarks in the government's 1994 budget. At the same time, the Kohl government's interior ministry provided a grant of 100,000 Deutschmarks to finance the reprinting of an entire series of Ostprussische Forschungen from 1924 to 1943, which promoted Hitler's racial theories and his so-called New Order in Europe. This rabidly Nazi organ was described by the Federal Interior Ministry as, quote, an eminent periodical, unquote, and as, quote, especially significant literature. Please note again that the Ostprussische Forschungen was a Nazi publication published from 1924 to 1943. It promotes Hitler's racial theories and the New Order in Europe, and the German government is now financing the reprinting of an entire series of this publication, referring to it as, quote, an eminent periodical, unquote, and as, quote, especially significant literature, unquote. And again, for those who might find some of my assertions that Germany was never effectively denazified and my statements about continuity between the old and the new Germany and between the German government and the German so-called neo-Nazis, if people find that extreme, well, there's abundant documentation. And again, the German government's refinancing of Ostprussische Forschungen, but one of many very disturbing examples. Returning again to reunited Germany, the new danger. The political assistance, that's the political assistance of the German government for Nazi efforts at recolonizing what used to be part of Greater Germany. The political assistance takes the form of officially published propaganda material for distribution to ethnic Germans inside and outside Germany. Especially targeted are the 3.5 million Germans in Eastern Europe, 2 million in the former USSR, 1 million in Poland, 220,000 in Hungary, 100,000 in Romania, and 100,000 in the Czech and Slovak republics. The next segment of Reunited Germany, the New Danger, is entitled Documents, and it, not surprisingly, consists of discussion and reprinting of various documents supporting information that either has been or will be covered. The segment reads, or this section reads, a brochure published from Referat VT-15 of the Federal German Interior Ministry entitled Help for Germans in Eastern Europe, Why? Gives a very clear taste of the thinking prevalent in Bonn. In the introduction to the brochure, Dr. Horst Waffenschmidt says that the purpose of German government aid is, quote, to give Germans in their current settlement regions new perspectives and to open up prospects of a new life, unquote. Explaining the motives for this, Waffenschmidt, State Secretary of the Interior Ministry, adds, quote, we have a duty to do so because they have suffered badly the consequences of the Second World War for a long time, only because they were Germans and wanted to remain Germans, unquote. That again from an official with the German Interior Ministry, Dr. Horst Waffenschmidt. Continuing, further on in the brochure, in a section entitled, Why Are We Responsible for Them?, a similar sentence is found. The Germans, at, quote, the Germans in Eastern Europe have suffered a particularly hard destiny in connection with the Second World War, only because they were and wanted to remain Germans. Many were deported from their various areas of settlement, especially to Siberia and Central Asia. Accompanying this official revision of history is a photograph showing a German in a cattle train with the caption, 1941 deportation to Siberia, unquote. In the entire brochure, there is not one single word about the destiny suffered by millions in Eastern Europe at the hands of the Hitler dictatorship, not one word about the German invasion of sovereign states, about their brutal occupation, about concentration and death camps, nor about genocide. Such material is no exception in the new reunified Germany. At the beginning of 1993, another of the Interior Ministry's, quote, products, unquote, caused an international scandal. The product in point was a glossy calendar issued by the German Central Office for Political Education in Schools, which is part of the Federal Interior Ministry, and to be hung in all Germany's schools and colleges, depicting, quote, Germany in Europe, unquote. Three of the calendar's big format pages included non-German territory under its heading. Thus, the Estonian capital Tallinn, the Polish city of Gdansk, and Heilige Linde in Polish former Prussia are treated as German possessions. By the way, we've covered this before, relying on information from the Germany Alert newsletter. Information about that later in this segment. Continuing. When German Social Democrat MP Volkmar Kretkowski criticized the calendar, he was told that it had, quote, been assembled hurriedly because of sickness-connected staff problems, unquote. Later, however, instructions were given that the calendar was, quote, not to be removed, unquote, from schools. Kretkowski should not have been surprised. Had he taken the trouble to read the Kohl government's official budget proposals for 1993, he would have noticed that the former German Democratic Republic is referred to not as East Germany, but as, quote, Central Germany, unquote, and that the term East German, unquote, is used with specific reference to East Prussia, Pomerania, and Silesia. In another official document of the German government, the Bundesgesetzblatt, the territory of Silesia is described as, quote, at the moment under foreign administration. Unquote. Silesia, of course, is part of Poland, and we're going to deal with German policy vis-a-vis Silesia in subsequent segments. Continuing, private enterprise, too, has laid claim to the repossession of former German territories. For example, in August of 1991, one of Germany's biggest-selling encyclopedias, the Meyer's Grossische Taschenlexikon, was found to have portrayed huge tracts of Poland and some of the then USSR as German territory. Defining the German word Vertriebene, the encyclopedia, which is a standard reference work, offered the following, quote, German citizens and German nationals who had their residence in German eastern territories which are temporarily under foreign administration, unquote. Brochures, calendars, official documents, and definitions like these cited above are sweet music to the ears of the galaxy of rightist lobbying organizations which purport to represent those, quote, expelled, unquote, from former German territories at the end of the Second World War. We have dealt with the reemergence of German fascism, the total failure of denazification, the responsibility for which lies squarely at the doorstep of the United States, and we've dealt with the imperial designs, the very evident imperial designs of Germany on parts of Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, in numerous broadcasts that are on permanent file with the tape duplication service. Radio Free America number 2, Radio Free America number 36, Radio Free America number 37 in particular, How the United States Lost the Second World War. I also very strongly recommend the Wilhelm Stauffer tapes available from this tape duplication service archives on audio. That, again, is a tape duplication service that stocks all of these archive shows containing the relevant documentation. Again, the address, etc., for Archives on Audio, which contains all of these archive shows.
Tape cassettes of Dave Emery's archive documentaries and weekly One Step Beyond programs are available from a tape duplication service. The service is Archives on Audio, and you can contact them at Post Office Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number is area code 415-346-1840. Once again, that's P.O. Box 170023, San Francisco, California, 94117-0023. The phone number and area code are 415-346-1840. A 12-page catalog listing and describing each archive show is available.
That's now a 19-page catalog, and again, all of the descriptions, synoptic descriptions of all of the archive shows are there. and the programs are cross-referenced with other broadcasts containing similar or related material. Now, in this series on Reunited Germany, the New Danger, we have been relying on the pamphlet by the same name, Reunited Germany, the New Danger. That is available from the people at Searchlight Magazine. And that and the Searchlight can be obtained from the following address.
To subscribe to the Searchlight, a British anti-fascist publication, write to Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, or phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax 011-4471-284-4410. That's the Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax at 011-4471-284-4410.
That, again, the address for Searchlight Magazine. People interested in following up about on information about the reemergence of German fascism should be sure to note the Germany Alert newsletter available on the Internet and the World Wide Web. Information about that right now.
If you are interested in receiving the Germany Alert newsletter via the Internet, you can do so by sending an email to ga-request@webcom.com and simply including the word subscribe in your note. That's email to ga-request@webcom.com with the word subscribe in your message text. You can also access the Germany Alert newsletter via the World Wide Web at http://www.webcom.com/tildechantry/ga. That's all lowercase letters, http://www.webcom.com/tilde/chantry/ga. Check it out.
That again for information about the Germany Alert newsletter. An excellent source for information about the reemergence of German fascism, a subject which is not getting covered elsewhere, sadly. And again, this is not to imply that fascism is something that is limited to Germany, as regular listeners to my program know only too well. I don't think there's much of anything that is going on in Germany that does not have its counterpart in the United States. I think the United States as well is plunging down the road to fascism. I do think our democratic traditions are considerably stronger than Germany's, and also we have a more racially pluralistic society, which will impede in certain respects. In certain respects, it may actually speed the onset of fascism because it'll offer people more scapegoats for their various economic problems. But again, this is a subject which sadly is not being covered elsewhere. It is, however, being covered here, and we will resume our discussion of Reunited Germany, the New Danger, in our next segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.